Coming up on Tech News Today, NSA caught by self breaking own privacy rules. Will they punish self? Who knows? Also, Sony signs Viacom to Internet TV. Big step there. And why Samsung may win the smartwatch race. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 16th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit. And use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zaka.
And I'm Jason L.
Sarah Lane is off in Miami for one more day. She'll be back on Monday. But we're still going to round up all the top stories in the tech world for you. Put them in some context, starting with the top 10 of the day in the news fuse. The Washington Post published documents it received from Edward Snowden earlier this summer, reporting that the U.S. NSA broke its own privacy rules 2,776 times in a one-year period, reported May 2012. The report was a self-audit meant for the NSA's top leaders. Members of Congress could only read the report in a secure room and would not be allowed to take notes. The incidents ranged from typos to computer error to workload issues. The Post reported that the secret court, known as FISC, ordered one fiber optic cable tap stopped in October 2011 for violating the Fourth Amendment. One of the documents published details how to strip out details when reporting incidents of FISA Amendment Act overseers.
The Verge reports that Nokia will be launching a 10.1-inch Windows RT-powered tablet in an event in New York, tentatively scheduled for September 26th. There's even a picture of the tablet, or an alleged picture of the back of the tablet, floating around the internet. If the pic is real, apparently Nokia hopes you like Magenta RT-powered tablets running on LTE networks.
Magenta. Bloomberg reports Samsung will announce a smartwatch under the name Galaxy Gear at its Unpacked 2 event during the IFA conference in Berlin September 4th. The watch will reportedly run Android and be able to make calls, handle email, and surf the web. So get ready to squint.
Yes, squinting is what I do. Dell, the company, not the man, reported financials for its fiscal second quarter. The company's net income fell 72% compared to the same time last year. For the second quarter, Dell pulled in $204 million, last year $732 million. The declining numbers still were better than the low expectations set by Wall Street, and shares rose less than 1%.
Sony has reached a preliminary deal with Viacom to carry its TV channels on a pay TV service to be delivered over the internet. Viacom's channels include MTV, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon, BET, and Logo. Wall Street Journal reports Sony plans to offer the service for owners of its game consoles and TVs. Intel, Google, and Apple are all reportedly looking to start similar services, but have not struck any deals yet. The details of the Sony-Viacom agreement have yet to be determined.
Yesterday, Google revoked access to Microsoft's YouTube app for Windows Phone. This was Microsoft's second attempt at a YouTube app and Google's second rejection of such an app. Microsoft had enough and posted a lengthy blog post entitled "The Limits of Google's Openness," saying that Google's reasoning for rejecting the YouTube app is, quote, nothing other than excuses, end quote, and that, quote, Google's reasons for blocking our app are manufactured so we can't give our users the same experience Android and iPhone users are getting. Microsoft said Google has set up impossible-to-overcome roadblocks, and Google knows it. Strong words. Let's see what Google has to say.
It's almost as if Microsoft operates a competing search engine, and Google doesn't like it. Wall Street Journal's Digits blog reports Apple has posted on LinkedIn more than 200 jobs available in China. Among the jobs are an environmental affairs program manager, a security specialist, and a store specialist. Apple has struggled with accusations of environmental and human rights violations at its Chinese manufacturing partner Foxconn, so that might explain one of those positions. China is seen as essential to Apple's ability to continue to grow worldwide sales.
Mercedes gave Wired a demo of its car with Google Glass integration. The first app it showed off was sending navigation data from Google Glass to the Mercedes in-dash navigation system. Mercedes North American R&D president and CEO says the company has been working with Glass for roughly 6 months and meeting with the Google Glass team regularly.
Google Cloud Storage, an enterprise-level service used by the likes of Ubisoft and Best Buy, will begin automatically encrypting its clients' data. 128-bit AES encryption will be applied to data before it is written to disk. Google will use the same key system it uses for its own data. User data and metadata will be encrypted using a unique key, which is then encrypted using a second key associated with the data owner, which is in turn encrypted using a regularly rotated master key. Google holds those keys. Amazon has offered 256-bit AES encryption on its competing S3 service since 2011.
The Ubuntu Edge Indiegogo campaign hit a milestone by having over $10.3 million pledged. This amount is more than the Pebble smartwatch picked up via crowdfunding. Canonical is still looking to raise $32 million in total. Only 6 more days left to fund the Edge, so if my math is right, there's a better chance of the mythical Apple television set launching tomorrow than the Edge getting funding.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace. You know how much we like Squarespace. I use it all the time. Lots of us use it all the time because it's easy, it's beautiful. We wanted to see a bunch of you are using Squarespace. What are you doing with it? So send us a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website and use this hashtag, TNT Squarespace. We'll take a look. We might even be able to talk about your site in a future episode. Some of our audience members have already sent us a tweet with a link to amazing sites that they've built. One of them we've been talking about is The Butler Did It, AVI.com. I've never seen a cleaning company so mysterious and so awesome. It's a clever name. Shows that you don't have to know anything about design and still create a great-looking, easy-to-use professional website with Squarespace templates. That's just a basic template, you know? And I'm not saying they don't know anything about design, but they didn't need to. They just put together this amazing picture, put together the template, got themselves a great-looking website. You can do the same thing, too. Check out how they use form features, by the way, to request a cleaning price quote. You can do forms. You can do images. You can do social networks. It's easy to use. Award-winning design. Search engine optimized. I know for a lot of people who are doing a small business, they want to show up in those search engines. It's one of the ways they're going to get any kind of business. And this ensures that your site's content can be crawled by Google, Yahoo, Bing, and all the other search engines. So start your trial now. You don't even have to give them a credit card. Don't even reach for your wallet. Just start building a website at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT8 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today at the same time. And don't forget, send a tweet with the hashtag TNT Squarespace. We could choose your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. It's Friday, and man, it's been a couple of Fridays since we had you on the show. Good to have you back, Darren Kitchen, coming
It's been too many.
The 1990s of Portland. You're in Portland today, huh? Portland, Oregon.
Yes, I am. I love my flannel is right over there, just to let you know. I'm in Portland on my way to Dallas, Houston, and Austin for the September 5th, 6th, and 7th meetups. So you got to go really far north to go really far south.
That's what they say, man. You got to spend distance to make distance or something.
I think that's how it went.
Hack Across America. Nice. Love it. Hackacrossamerica.com if you want to know more details about where Darren's going to be. Also joining us on a Friday, as has become our tradition, Len Peralta, internet cartoonist, illustrator of the 10-State comic that I write with him, and LenPeralta.com. Are you excited about today's stories, Len?
I am really excited. I think there's some good art going to be coming out of it. So let's get arting.
Yes.
Let's get it arted.
Let's get it arted up.
Yeah.
Or something. Anyway, actually, we're going to start with the NSA self-audit. Leaked out. Edward Snowden gave this stuff to Washington Post earlier this summer. They finally got around to verifying and publishing and redacting and all of that. They put the documents up online. But as you can see, they do try to make an attempt to keep, at least the Post does, personal information out of it where appropriate. 3,032 files by the U.S. were retained despite a destruction order in February 2012. A fiber optic tap couldn't separate U.S. from foreign email. And so the secret court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, ordered it stopped. after several months of operation, calling it deficient on statutory and constitutional grounds. 1 in 10 instances of this sort of privacy violation were a typo. So think on it. Put in a typo. Oops, they're looking at your information. Sorry about that. Which means they're definitely sweeping in information of U.S. citizens. They also detail in a separate document target analyst rationale instructions explaining how NSA employees should strip out details and substitute generic descriptions of evidence and analysis behind targeting choices when reporting to the FISA Amendments Act overseers. So a lot of this is just clarifying, solidifying, giving extra evidence to what a lot of people knew or expected, which is that the government is collecting large swaths of information that does include U.S. intelligence, that the NSA has privacy self-audits in place to check and remedy any kind of violations. They've said they do that. It's clear that they do. That the court will, in fact, weigh in and stop them in cases, but that these privacy violations are happening. They're happening in larger and larger numbers every year, if you look at this report. Is this, are we starting to get revelation fatigue? Is this just like, oh, geez, another one? Or is this firing you up? Darren, what about you?
Well, I mean, this, of course, it always fires me up, but I hope there's not revelation fatigue. I hope that this really just reinforces the findings that the NSA finds the constitution optional. And keep in mind that this is an NSA self-audit. So the way I see it is this is probably like best case scenario. But don't let this, you know, make you lose your trust in your government. You know, 2,000 violations out of like 200 million, that's nothing. You know, we should give them a break. You know, I mean, because if they told Congress the truth all the time, then they might not be able to violate the Fourth Amendment anymore. So I think we should just leave Brittany and the NSA alone.
I don't know if I can get fired up anymore about this. It's just the idea that there was privacy or that the government isn't checking on you no matter what. And even these like ridiculous, oh, we have a typo. And so, you know, Tom Merritt with one T got checked out instead of Tom there in L.A. It just seems like they're checking everybody anyway. I guess it's kind of this horrible, defeatist, cynical look now. All right, this is what's happening. The fact that they are publicly saying things or we're seeing information come out more and more, it in theory should get people angrier, but it seems like the thing that gets people angry is like when their cell phones don't work or if internet's out or if the cable doesn't work, that seems to get people annoyed. But being spied on doesn't seem to be getting a lot of people fired up.
Yeah, it doesn't affect me directly, so why should I care?
Yeah, I think the revelations are starting to, and this happens with any story. I think Ayaz is right. It's not right, but it's also not, it's just the way humans are built. It's not unusual to say, I remember this when I was working as an intern at the Morning Edition at NPR, and we were covering the Bosnian horror that was going on. And one of the editors was like, oh, another Bosnia story. And at first I wanted to be outraged. Like, what? This is an important story. There's horrible things. But I also got it. Like, when you deal with it every day, it starts to just become meaningless. And that's what's happening with a lot of these stories. The question is, we want them to use this information to catch the bad guys. And they're trying to say, look, we need to sweep in this data so that we can get the foreign data, so that we can get the intel, and so that we can get the information to stop the bad guys. The question is, could they be more transparent? Would it really have a negative effect on their ability to go after the bad guys? And do they need to be sweeping in all of this information to do it? And I think it's a simple case of the NSA really honestly trying to do their job, but wanting a little wiggle room to make mistakes. Everybody, as they say in one of these reports, everybody's human. Everybody makes mistakes. So, Darren, I mean, what should we do to allow them to continue to do their job but stop invading our privacy?
I don't know what you can do because, I mean, it's one of those things where you see this stuff and you're like, oh, this is beyond me. This is beyond, like, I can't do anything about this. I'm going to compartmentalize this and find some way to rationalize what's happening that's beyond my control. You know, there's the typical, you know, lobby Congress kind of ways, and there's, you know, the uphold the Constitution and that kind of stuff. And but as far as, like, fixing the whole construct, I haven't a clue.
Just being aware and getting people to know about this information going out. If their constitutional rights are being affected and you actually do have standing in the case, if somebody's bold enough to go into court, try to bring this up, that it has to be adjudicated, that somebody actually has to answer for their actions. The fact that there's maybe potentially more transparency, we might see that with maybe Google and other companies having all the requests they've taken in, if they can post this information. So the more information we can get out there, and the more that somebody out there is going to just get fed up with this and go, look, we have to challenge this as this is not the way that the country is supposed to be structured, and see where this is supposed to go in the judicial route. I think as long as this information is out there, somebody's going to care. So while you know, the daily grind of a newsman, you're just kind of like, yes, it seems awful. But as a citizen, you have to be aware this is happening. So as long as the NSA, if they're actually – now they're publicly saying stuff. If Google can publish their information, if we can get more and more of this, it might make a difference in the long run. But it's going to take a while to fix years and years of this stuff.
Don't know what's happening in order to figure out what needs to be tried in court.
Right. Well, I was looking at the Fourth Amendment issue. So if that's the kind of case, and then
– that now we know that because of a leak.
Right.
Wouldn't that before. Even Congress can't look at this stuff unless they know to look for it and then go to a secret room and not take notes. Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, did not know about this self-audit. There needs to be more transparency. Great. What does that mean? We need to put the pressure on people to get down to brass tacks and say, what does that transparency involve? Because we don't want it to be irresponsible, but we want it to protect our privacy. We need both of those things. This is a tough one. This is a tough problem, and it needs. And I think it's easy to get fatigued, but we need to keep the pressure on the government to figure it out, and the industry, frankly, all of it.
And continue to raise awareness about these kinds of things, because if anything, the best thing that all of this has done really is just raise awareness to how plain text the web is, how insecure stuff is, and kind of open people's minds to alternatives like PGP and GPG and things of that sort.
Yeah, protect yourself too. We've been saying that. That's a good point. All right, let's talk about something a little more lighthearted. So not even that much. Oh, yeah, it is. Comparatively, Sony and Viacom partnering up, Baez.
Yeah, so this is nowhere near as heavy as the last story. Wall Street Journal is reporting that Sony has reached a preliminary deal with Viacom to carry its channels on Sony's planned pay TV service. Like Tom mentioned before, Viacom owns a ton of channels like Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, MTV, and a whole bunch more. The Journal says none of the other companies trying to do this have a deal in place yet. So Google's been trying to do this. They don't have anything yet. Journal sources say that Sony has to nail down details still with Viacom and is still in talks with Walt Disney, Time Warner, and CBS to get their stuff going there. And the Journal article had some details on Sony's service. They want to stream cable channels and on-demand programming over the internet to Sony TVs and the PlayStation. Expectations say the PlayStation would get it first. It would include a recommendation system, so content companies could give you recommendations as to different content you could watch, and Sony will provide some recommendations based on an algorithm. The Journal says that Sony's interface is highly graphic and easy to use. Darren, Sony has been kind of struggling in the past, 10, 15 years now. It seems like they've moved from a consumer electronics giant to kind of not exactly there. Do you think this would make a huge difference for them as a company?
I mean, if they can make the deals and partnerships that they need to bring a compelling experience, I feel like if anyone was actually able to, because the thing is, it's so, as far as all of these content deals are, it's always so fragmented. So, whoever is the first to market that actually has, what we want, which is everything now, if they could provide that, then yeah, this could be huge. Can anyone provide that? Can Sony provide that? I don't know.
Yeah, I was looking at the article that I know you have noted here, as Peter Kafka on All Things D, saying even if Sony does this, it'll still be the same stuff you get from cable. It'll just be over the internet. And he sort of takes the angle, and rightly so, that this isn't very revolutionary. But I still think it is revolutionary enough because we are so slow in bringing the benefits of technology and the internet to television distribution, that if anybody, I don't care whether it's good for their company or not, if anybody, Sony or anybody else, can take that first step and say, now we're delivering even a totally traditional bundled cable service over the internet instead of over the pipes, then all of a sudden there's permission and there's competitive drive to get the incumbents to drop their current distribution methods and stop having monopolies in the United States anyway, so that we can have actual competition over our cable television services. And I think that's huge.
Yeah, I love the idea of being able to, if Sony was successful with this and Google is and Apple and every other company, if they can possibly do this, even if it's with that traditional model like we have now, at least you'd be able to switch providers relatively simply, because you stick to your internet provider and you're just changing your pay subscription, so that you could have a more you could have hopefully more innovation when it comes to the UI, when it comes to these things. Maybe there's features about a Google service that's better than a Sony service is better than that. That way we actually have some real changes going on. And to be able to just switch your provider by what, doing a phone call or just signing up, that'd be way better than, okay, let's get the dish guy in here. Okay, he's going to put that on the ceiling, make sure that, I mean, on the roof, that's going to work. Instead of having to bring the infrastructure into your house, you already have it. And it'd be as easy to switch as the old days with landlines. You just switch the landline. You're like, oh, I'm going to switch to, I don't know what, MCI. That was a thing back then. But that, I really think this could lead, even with a traditional model, it could just lead to really good competition and maybe really good ways to get the content.
And no, I absolutely agree with Tom that these are the kind of incremental steps toward progress that we need. And, you know, as fragmented as it is right now, these are the kinds of things that need to happen. You know, for more competition to exist and to, as you said, break the traditional barrier.
And it's good for people who want to get into the business of being a distributor. Mm-hmm. Because now they just need to deliver it over the internet. They don't have to go to the city and ask to dig up all the pipes. It could be better for people to be able to deliver internet service because now there's less competition for those right-of-ways. There's a bunch of cable down there that wouldn't be being used anymore eventually. There's all kinds of good things that come out of that.
And back to the Sony angle, if Sony is the first company to successfully line up a company like Viacom, if they can get this going and they can, they have their one deal in place, which makes it a little easier for the other companies to have deals in place in the future, or at least set a model, because Viacom could say, Sony did this. But if Sony gets their stuff off the ground, that could be a huge boon for their electronics in general. We've seen a lot of streaming things on the PlayStation 3. We've seen their media capabilities. Sony's always wanted to own your living room. They wanted to have that one box. Microsoft kind of caught up to them when it came to that dream. But if Sony has television and they had like NFL Direct Ticket for a little bit, if they have these elements and they have this PlayStation, which becomes the one station, whatever it would be, if they had that, that could be big, especially with all their streaming services between Sony Music and Unlimited Movies and Crackle and whatever else. If they can just put it together, they could have something huge.
And Sony won't have NFL Sunday Ticket this week, just as a side note. Samsung Unpacked 2, we heard it in the news fuse, probably going to announce a watch. Sounds like it's a lock. It hasn't been confirmed, of course, because we won't confirm it until September 4th. But you want to talk about somebody being first to market and actually getting advantage. Whoever gets first to market with the watch theoretically would have an advantage. Is this the watch that makes the smartwatch market finally? I mean, I know we have Pebble and we've had spot watches and all of that. Darren, what do you think?
Well, no, you're right. We've had toys before. I mean, Sony's got a lineup of connected watches, but they're not very smart. They're dependent on like Android phone and they just Bluetooth to it, and they don't have really an operating system to speak of. So, if Samsung can do this, they're going to get the early adopters that are jazzed about the idea of actually having, a device that's independent of something in their pocket, tethered and Bluetooth and all of that stuff. And that's going to be awesome because it's a techno-geek fashion mobility accessory / connected device. Like, I'm, jazzed about it. I'd love to rock one just for those times where, you're wondering, all right, I'm going out tonight. Do I put my SIM card in the Note 8, in the Note 3, or the watch?
This device, if I remember right, I don't think it's going to be an independent device, right? This is going to be something that's a companion to your Galaxy phone or some other Android device, right?
Well, these are all rumors, but I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so if it's a companion device, Sony does have one out there, and we have seen other competitors, but I think Samsung has the marketing power to make a difference when it comes to this market. They might be big enough to explain the concept that here's this device that you use with your phone. Although they did have that bizarre S4 or S3 Pebble thing. They had this little MP3 player attachment. So maybe it depends on how they market the message, because it's not like they can just go out and say, hey, this is better than that silly old thing you had before. They have to explain what this is to everybody. But they have a huge marketing budget. And if they do a big Broadway show or whatever they're going to do this time to explain, hey, look, information on my watch. If they can figure that out, maybe they'll be the company to make the market.
But everybody wants a smartwatch. That's what all the analysts tell me.
The analysts say that, but wasn't all the polls said the opposite? I forget, it was either IDC or one of the companies that said something like 14% were psyched about watches because they wanted to get like Facebook data. It's really about what data you get on your phone, right? What thing, or not phone, what are you going to get on your watch that's different than your phone? Because if it's just another screen for your phone, it's not unique enough. If there's something that you can do with it that you could never do, maybe add fitness tracking, because I know Samsung, they have some fitness tracking elements in their phones. If they can make this a fitness tracker slash companion device slash Bluetooth headset that I guess you could put near your head, maybe it starts offering more than just another screen for your second screen.
See, I feel like if it's its own device, then that's actually revolutionary. But at the same time, that brings its own like unique challenges as far as the user experience are concerned. What's probably more likely here with Samsung is that it would be a companion device. And I feel like if Samsung really wanted to jumpstart the industry there, they could couple it with a phone, say like, you know, the Galaxy S5, and it comes with a watch, you know.
Maybe the Note 3 comes with a watch then, because we're going to hear about that probably, you know,
I feel like they should come with these as well. You know, I feel like all phones should come with their own unique NFC ring or something like that.
Isn't Motorola working on a ring? Am I remembering that right? Somebody is.
I thought it was like a Kickstarter or a Indiegogo or something. But, you know, I'm thinking.
Yeah, this is the one.
Maybe there's a chance that this watch is dockable. Well, how about that? What if you could actually make it into a phone at the end of the day, if it's its own device? Like if you kind of do like a pad phone style thing where you can make it a phone. So it is something more. It has to be something.
A watch phone.
Yes. You just hit the nail on the head. We combine watches with tablets, tab watches, an 8-inch device on my wrist.
We're going to look like Flavor Flav at the end of the day. Just giant things hanging right here. I think we're onto something. Big analog clocks next.
Yeah, that unlock your phone. I love it. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. One of the weapons in your arsenal of personal protection on the internet should be VPN. Governments, ISPs, all kinds of nefarious and sometimes not nefarious institutions are trying to see into your data, and you may not want them to, especially that free Wi-Fi. We always talk about that. If you're doing any kind of free Wi-Fi, definitely use VPN. I use it whenever I travel, whenever I go to a coffee shop or something, you even an Apple store. Don't use the open Wi-Fi. Use VPN without VPN anyway. ProXPN is a global VPN. I use it. Works with almost any internet connection. Creates a 512-bit encryption tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application works with it. Your browser, your email, your file sharing program, your instant messaging program. Keeps everything you do hidden from prying eyes. You can bypass internet filtering, protect yourself against your ISP six strikes rule. There's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. OpenVPN or PPTP can be configured on iOS. They can be configured on Linux. And, of course, they have clients that work on Windows and Mac as well. Go check it out. World-class customer support. Steve Gibson even gave it a great review on Security Now. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts, normally $9.95 a month, $74.95 for the entire year. But we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and you're going to get 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into more rumored device announcement. Looks like Nokia has a largish tablet.
Yeah, so according to Tom Warren over at The Verge, Nokia is going to unveil a Windows RT tablet next month in New York. Nokia is trying to get developers for the event, which is penciled in for September 26th. No official announcements about that yet. The device is codenamed Vanquish and runs a Qualcomm quad-core Snapdragon 800 processor. It would have LTE, and the first version of it would be available on the AT&T network in the U.S. Now, photos of the device may have leaked, or this could be another device, who knows, on the Chinese site DigiWo. The image shows a 10.1-inch device that would run on Verizon's LTE network. Darren, we've seen lots of companies, like big companies that is, like Asus and Samsung, distance itself from Windows RT in the United States. Nokia, if this is true, would be bringing a Windows RT tablet to the U.S. Is this the right route for Nokia?
Well, okay, so Asus and the others are distancing themselves from Windows RT for a good reason, and that is it's not selling. Now, Nokia has a contract with Microsoft, and I have no idea what the terms of that are, whether there's subsidies or kickbacks in there. But it seems like they're kind of single-handedly propping up Windows RT at this point. It really makes you wonder what Nokia's kind of like exit strategy from that is, or launching off point to whatever other market will actually sustain them. And I think that's kind of more interesting at this point than whatever this check the box tablet that they've provided with Microsoft's operating system is.
See, I'm thinking about the late September announcement that theoretically, if this tablet does come out, it would be around the same time as Windows 8.1, which I think they're calling Windows RT 8.1 or something like that. So it would have a lot more of the functionality and maybe even theoretically more software that they could use to show this thing off. The big issue with Windows RT was education. And that's the thing. I think Samsung famously was saying that they don't want to try to explain why something's called Windows RT and it doesn't run all the old apps, doesn't have a desktop, although it did have that strange desktop-like, the desktop version of Office installed. So it had like elements of the old style, but with this new version of Windows, it was confusing. Nokia, you're probably right about that, Darren, that Nokia is like probably contracted to do something with Microsoft. Microsoft also propping up Windows RT with its Surface RT, still discounting them. Could it be the hardware, though? Samsung makes good hardware, ASUS makes good hardware. Could Nokia's hardware make it look or feel cool? Could Windows RT be like really nice in a Verizon store?
No. You got the Surface. The contractual obligation is the only possible explanation for a rational reason for Nokia to do this. Windows RT is not a way to win when you are behind. If you're in front, like Samsung, and you want to try and experiment, go for it. But otherwise, that is not what you do. Nokia needs, if they want to come out with a tablet, come out with a full-on Windows tablet, or come out with an Android tablet. Maybe that violates your contract. I don't know. But this is not the thing, in my opinion, that is going to get Nokia out from under their problems right now. They're making better headway with their smartphones. I don't know why they would do this.
Yeah, and seeing this...
Because it says Q4, one tablet.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. That's the only possible reason.
Yeah, seeing the specs, I'm wondering if there's been this rumor of a Nokia phablet. So that'd be a Windows phone device a larger Windows phone device. That would make more sense to me because Windows phone is far more accepted compared to Windows RT. They run on the same architecture. That's one of those weird, confusing things going on at Microsoft still. Why do you have RT if you have Windows phone? Why don't the apps run on each other? You could really bolster one or the other by merging them. Maybe... I'm hoping these reports are somewhat jumbled. I'm sure that Nokia was working.
Microsoft wants to merge them. That's why they're doing that silly tile interface. They're moving in that direction.
Oh, they're getting there. Just I'm wondering if that with the 8.1 or if maybe this. I'm hoping that all the rumors are just jumbled. That we're going to see a larger Nokia phone. It's not a tablet. It's like a 6-inch Windows device. But then that starts questioning the line of what is a phone versus a tablet, especially with Microsoft before merging the OSs. One runs RT and one runs Windows Phone. They have to figure that out. But I don't think RT is going to do anything for Nokia other than be a nice little loss for that quarter.
Yeah, the good news for the Ubuntu Edge is also the bad news for the Ubuntu Edge. It set a funding record, $10.3 million, topping what the Pebble was able to get together for its launch. But unfortunately, they set such a high goal, $32 million goal, that they're still... over $20 million, more than $20 million away from achieving their goal with 6 days left. Now, I backed this thing because taking a second to look at it today, this is an incredible phone. You are able to dual boot Android and an Ubuntu desktop OS. You can plug it into a keyboard and a laptop and a keyboard and a screen and be using it like a laptop, using it like a desktop. But you can also use Android, make it just be an Android phone. 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gig of internal storage. They're going to try to get it the fastest processor they can when they start, so we'll have to wait and see. Sapphire glass, which I think is interesting. And $695 unlocked. Sounds pricey and it's driving people away. But when you compare that to the iPhone 5, which is $849 for the 64 gig version, or the S4, which is $750 for the 16 gig version, this is a bargain. When I posted that I had backed this morning, I got two reactions. One, too expensive. And the other is, it's a lost cause. Darren, how do you feel about this? And do you think it has any shot to possibly get made?
Okay, it does if just some, you know, rich, eccentric billionaire just pops in out of nowhere and props this up. I feel like this has to happen if there's going to be, you know, true open source in the smartphone market. We've seen stuff coming out of, you know, Samsung and the likes that isn't quite exactly open source, but close. But I feel like somebody needs to truly bring this to market. And you really can't, you know, yes, the price is, it's expensive, but you have to compare it to not just a phone, because like you said, it's a real machine. Like, you could actually do some work on this thing. So I'm sad, because Canonical has been doing fantastic stuff. As much as I like to harsh on Unity and some of the other missteps that they've made with transparency and things of that nature, someone has to put the dollars behind open source to bring it to the mainstream. And I don't want it to kind of become like a relic of yesteryear and end up just on servers and, like, you know, hippies desktops at home. It needs to find its way into tablets and smartphones, as that's the direction that the, you know, computing era is morphing into. And if anyone can, I mean, it used to be that it was like your Novells and people of that nature. I feel like Canonical is really the only company poised right now to actually do that. So maybe their goal was too high. I don't know. At $600 a unit with 3 million, what is that, like 5,000 units? That's not a whole lot. You know, that's kind of actually a small run in manufacturing. So yeah, I don't expect that. I mean, I don't even know if Canonical's idea is even to make money on this or just bring it to market. I mean, it sounds like a very expensive endeavor, you know, just looking at the specs of it. So I hope if they can't, they try again.
Yeah, I think this is a very bold experiment. Try to do a $32 million fixed funding Indiegogo instead of doing a flexible funding one. That I thought was kind of surprising, because what they could have done, Canonical could have taken whatever they raised and try to make a number of devices, but then again, it could be financially not feasible to do that. So they had to set such a high goal. In the intro videos when they discussed this, or Mark Shuttlesworth talks about it, he wanted it, if this funded, that they might even do this every year, this theoretical, like, we'll rev this bleeding edge phone. That's why it's called the Edge. It's supposed to be really awesome specs. The fact is that it's kind of a hard sell in general. You have this idea of, in some people's minds, you're going to Indiegogo, you're buying a product, you're going to get this device, and you can see a phone for $100 on contract, and they go, oh, that's not the same. So you have that barrier there. Then you're also running into the barrier of a dual booting phone. We've talked about devices that run Android and Windows, and we're like, why do those exist, and who are they for? This is like, it's like you're looking at a very, very niche group. And if they have $32 million to give, apparently they don't want to give it. So I don't know. I think, Tom, you might be right about the idea that because they're 6 days away and they have to raise $20 million, people are just like, this isn't funding. I'm not putting my money into it, which is causing nobody to fund it. So it's not even close. So we're running into this weird thing. So I don't know what they could do. They can't change the price anymore. They've done that like twice. So I don't know.
In the next web article, they point out that Cloud Imperium Games has raised $15 million for its MMO Star Citizen. Now, that's an open-ended funding thing. That's not an Indiegogo. It's just, we're going to continue to raise money for this MMO on our site. Ubuntu could do that. Canonical could do that alternative. I think they decided to do the 30-day fixed funding because often that gets you more money. And that's been proven on Kickstarter, that you can, when you give people a deadline and build some tension around it, it will cause people to gather around, get more attention, and get it funded. You have to be a lot closer to your goal with 6 days left, though, for that to work. I just don't see them doing 20 million. And that starts, like you say, IS to work against them, because people who might be thinking about buying one decide not to bother because it's not going to get funded anyway.
Yeah, see, this is an Adam Sandler movie just waiting to happen. You know, we need to save the community center and the open source phone. Big sale.
That's yeah. Savage. Well, I hope Canonical takes the funding on their own, but even then, if it's open ended, how long would it take to get $32 million? They may take too long for them to do it, and they do want to do this to show manufacturers what Ubuntu on a phone can be. They would like to get other people making the phones and putting Ubuntu on them. That's the ultimate goal.
It would be really interesting to see if some sort of like angel investors got into this at the last minute, and then it would be like the first kind of hybrid traditional investing plus crowdsource investing. I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, weird. All right, let's finish up with Mercedes Google Glass integration.
Yeah, so Wired,
we'll
find out if it's a good idea soon. Wired has an article about Mercedes testing out Google Glass with its cars. Now, they demoed a function called door-to-door navigation with Wired's Damon Lavrink. Here's how the system works. So you use a navigation app on the Google Glass. You put an address through the Google Glass, and then you get in the car. You plug in your phone, and then the information is transferred from your phone to the in-dash navigation, and you can actually go ahead on your trip. When the trip is over, you unplug your phone, and that will send a signal back to Google Glass telling it that your trip is over so you can track all these things. Mercedes even figured out a way how to get the iPhone to work with this system. iPhone is not supported by Google just yet, and Mercedes did note that its buyers are frequently iOS users. They figured out a way using their own servers to have Google Glass communicate with both of the systems at once to try to figure it out. It's kind of a rigged solution, and the North American R&D head of Mercedes said, this rigging system is not likely the system that will be in the final version of Mercedes. This is just a prototype. Mercedes will be integrating some form of Google Glass in the future, and they say Android integration is coming in 2014. Darren, this kind of Google Glass Mercedes integration, does this sound like an appealing thing to you?
Well, it sounds like one of those things where remember the first vehicle that had like iPod integration, and everybody was like, "Oh, that's a really expensive iPod accessory." This is just you take two brands that that are kind of like exclusive and hot and stuff like that, and you just put them together, and that's just basic marketing. And I think this is fantastic. It's kind of an obvious choice. And I don't necessarily say that this would like persuade me to go with like a Mercedes. I'm more partial to the whole idea of like having a HUD on, say, a motorcycle helmet. But, yeah, why not? That certain people are going to find this really attractive.
I probably shouldn't say this, but in secret, I have been using door-to-door navigation for a long time now. I start the navigation in my house, and then I put the phone in my pocket, walk to the car, and then hook it up in the car, and then I drive, and then I take the phone with me to the other door at the other end.
Yeah, and it tracks your whole
trip.
It's
probably against the terms of service. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm just saying. So, why couldn't I just put the in directions in the Google Glass at the beginning, drive my car, and then they're still going when I get out of the car? Why do I need Mercedes involved at all? I don't get it.
I think I've seen some reports of saying some states and maybe some countries were trying to outlaw using Google Glass while driving. So the thing is, if you're using this device, you'd be able to seamlessly work together. I think you're just not floored with the actual demo usage. What I'm more interested in is the fact that Glass can work with the car system somewhat seamlessly, so you don't have to, okay, I've got the information over here. I mean, how many times do you have like information on your computer that you want to send to your tablet or phone, and you either send yourself a text or you got to do some little silly workaround, or you use the Google Chrome kind of function where you can just go other devices, pop up the tab. It's, I think the theory is that with more apps, you could have easier communication between the different devices, because having one device talk to another, I haven't found to be exactly super easy. But if you could do that, that'd be interesting. But you're right. Why would you bother with that? You could just use your phone. I think it's more than just that small demo.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Now, I really only had one randomizer selection today, but I at the request of the chat room, I did a straw poll anyway. It ended up with 62% voting to shoot Rubicant, which I feel that's way too violent. Please do not shoot Rubicant in the chat room. Euchre, our chat room member, got second place, 21%. And presenting the story as intended only got 17%. But this is now a banana republic. I'm throwing out the vote. And we're going to present the story as intended because it's too awesome. The CIA acknowledges that Area 51 exists. I knew it.
Tom, I feel like continuing on with your discussion on percentages and statistics, we should clarify that Area 51 is a wonderful place in the grand state of Nevada, and it actually takes up 5.42% of the total landmass of Nevada.
Wait a second.
And that right there is information you can use.
Wait a second. So let's see what happens here. So the NSA admits it gives away all, it's doing all these mistakes, violating the Constitution, all kinds of stuff. Then it's like, Area 51 is real. or look CIA does. Yeah, so it's like, hey, look, aliens maybe. That's really smart. This is good PR. It's like when anytime there's an Apple announcement, I always write on Twitter, if you're going to do something stupid in the tech world, do it on September 10th. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, this is a brilliant move.
Is it that brilliant, though? Because NSA made the top discussion.
Yeah.
Area 51 randomizer.
Yeah, Area 51 is CIA. Maybe CIA is just feeling like they're not getting the love now. They're like, oh, come on, we do cool stuff, too. Look.
Hey, look at us.
We made the U2 spy plane. Gary Powers, remember Gary Powers? That was us.
Yeah, this shows is that Area 51 is entirely irrelevant. The only thing that surprises me about this at all is that it was actually called Area 51. It was called that because on the planning map that they used when they decided to make that their test area, the planning map, that was the 51st area on the planning map. Booyah.
Booyah.
Mic drops. Shall we move on to the calendar?
Let's. So Microsoft is going to close its Xbox PC Marketplace on August 22nd. Titles that gamers already purchased through the PC Marketplace will still be available to use after August 22nd. You just can't buy new games after that date. Also on the 22nd, the Verizon HTC One will hit stores. On August 23rd, AT&T will begin selling the Moto X. The 16-gigabyte model costs $200. 32-gigabyte model costs $250. Both require a contract. And coming up in May 2014... Apple and all other parties to the ebook price fixing scandal must be ready for a damages trial, according to an order issued by U.S. District Court Judge Denise Coate.
Who's excited? Now, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It is a message, so he was right about that. This is a message from Mike. He says, one thing I think people forget about Google scanning our emails is that they have no problem with them scanning our attachments for viruses. How is the content of an email any different? Just a thought.
Well, that's an interesting point. Is there a significant difference to saying, yes, I do want you to scan this for a virus, but no, don't look at the other characters? I mean, that's kind of silly at the server level. Again, it's not human eyes. They're not reading, per se. Hey, TNT crew, says Ben from Virginia. He's talking about all these government surveillance stories that come every day. He says, this did not make a lot of sense until I heard the recent Security Now podcast about the state of surveillance. Thank you, Ben. I've been meaning to mention this, and I keep forgetting. Ben writes, Steve has a pretty convincing theory that the PRISM project is literally splitting light, fiber optic signals, allowing the NSA to tap large ISP trunk lines and receive a copy of the data just upstream of the major corporations. This makes a lot of sense, how they can have copies of a company like Google's data without Google knowing about it or being complicit. Just an eye-opener for me, and it seems relevant to many of your stories. And today, in those documents that were posted by the Washington Post, there's that example we talked about of the NSA saying, oh yeah, we have a tap on a fiber optic line, and we're not able to separate the foreign from the U.S. emails, and that was the one declared unconstitutional. That's probably not the only fiber optic line they have a tap on. So that seems to lend a tiny bit of support to Steve's theory. Good stuff.
And finally, we got another email from Scott who says, as a designer, imagine the wow factor of presenting 3D models to clients sitting around a table with the projector coming from above, like that promo video. Enough said. I want one. I don't know that it would increase productivity, though. I want one, too.
Yeah, it just sounds cool. I'm with Scott and you both. Well, thank you, Darren Kitchen, for joining us today. We talked a little bit about Hack Across America. What's your schedule again?
I am going to be in Dallas, Houston, and Austin on September 5th, 6th, and 7th, and a bunch of places in between before then. And I encourage everybody to go over to hack5.org or hackacrossamerica.com and check out a talk that I gave at the Crash Space Hackerspace in Los Angeles on internet freedom. It's one that I've been kind of like working on even before the whole PRISM stuff broke, but really talking about alternative infrastructures and kind of the pillars of internet freedom. And so it's something that you should check out. It's a part of a larger discussion, and I think that it's one that should be had.
Definitely check that out. It's a good talk. HAK5.org. And now the moment we've all been anticipating through the entire show, Len Peralta will reveal the final versions of the illustrations he's been showing you on the video.
Oh, yeah. So let's start with story number one about the NSA. I am still kind of amazed that all this information is coming out, all this you know, about the NSA. But is it getting tedious? I don't know. The image here is a woman in the shower saying, maybe it is getting a little bit tedious. And I drew a nice little picture of the NSA there as a kind of like a...
flattering.
Yeah. Monster or something. Story number two, the Sony TV. Of course, there is going... I think they're going to have some crossovers from some of the PlayStation-only characters. So this fall on Sony TV, Kratos in Breaking Bones. Because, of course, I think it's going to be an awesome show. And just right in time as the original Breaking Bad ends, I think that'll be a good move for Sony if they can pull it off.
Perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Story number three. The Samsung Watch. I thought what really would help them with this watch is to get a good Samsung Watch spokesperson. I thought a good person would be, of course, Dick Tracy, who's got his handy dandy Samsung Watch on his arm there. Apologies to Chester Gould, of course.
Thanks, Dick Tracy.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you. Story number four. Is anybody interested about the Nokia tablet? Well, I say, you know, from no deal. Which, you know, the little gentleman here is saying Nokia has a tablet to big deal where it dispenses bacon. I think that's what they need
brilliant.
To do.
That would win over Reddit.
Untapped markets.
Oh, yeah. I forgot kittens, too. Bacon or kittens, either one. I think that's another model, though. So
dispenses
I think
bacon to your kittens.
Well, there you go. Awesome. The Ubuntu, you know, when you really think about it, I mean, that's a lot of money to raise. So they are a behemoth, but if you really think about it, Ubuntu's Edge beat a Pebble, and that's exactly what they're yelling at here. It's like that's
pretty
deal.
A little literal here, yeah.
Exactly. And then finally, you know, I don't know about this Google Glass built in the Mercedes. I think it's a little bit dangerous. That got me thinking about just things that I like. Rat Fink, of course. This is what it would look like if Rat Fink wore a Google Glass. A little bit
a
little bit crazy.
He's driving there.
I don't know what he's driving exactly, but it's awesome. Very interesting. So I have a straw poll ready. I'm going to put it in the chat room, and so if any of those interest you, put them right into the chat room, and people can vote on which one was their favorite. So
check them out: peraltartsy.myshopify.com, or you can go to lenperalta.com. You can go to our show notes. It's even linked from the top of the subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. Thank you, Len Peralta. That's amazing.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Don't forget, folks, if you are available on Wednesday, August 28th, a mere 12 days from now at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and you would like to be on our mid-year open mic show, we're going to be putting up on Labor Day, where we talk to selected members of the audience. By all means, tell us. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, with the subject line, open mic. That's M-I-C. Tell us a little bit about yourself, why we should pick you. Obviously, we won't be able to pick everyone. It's only going to be two or three people. But we do want to hear if you're interested, so let us know. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We're taking the weekend off, but we'll be back on Monday with Clayton Morris as our guest. See you then.